Good afternoon. From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. Heavy rainfall in Juneau this week caused untreated wastewater from a city pump station downtown to overflow into the Gatineau Channel for several hours. Chad Gubala is the production and treatment manager at the city's wastewater utility. He says heavy rain paired with the high tide overwhelmed the pump station along Egan Drive, which is currently undergoing a major reconstruction. He says the potential environmental and human health impacts of the overflow are expected to be minimal to none. Samples of the water appear to be very diluted.
It went out once again in an area where there's typically no human contact. It gets diluted very quickly and it gets consumed by the natural microorganisms in our channel pretty quickly as well and becomes part of the food chain.
The approximately 160,000 gallons of discharge was a mixture of stormwater and wastewater, or sewage, that was headed to the Juneau Douglas Wastewater Treatment Plant. But instead, it overflowed into the channel before being treated. The overflow happened twice, first on Wednesday for a brief 30-minute window, and then again yesterday, which lasted several hours. Gubala says once the reconstruction project of the pump station is complete, overflows like this likely won't happen again. The city notified the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation after the initial discharge. The city is currently undertaking several reconstruction projects for its utility infrastructure, as much of it reaches the end of its lifespan. Gubala says repairing and maintaining infrastructure now is key to preventing other accidents like this from happening in the future. Learning outdoors is nothing new for students at Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy in Juneau. That's what they did on their first field trip of the year, where they learned about Tlingit language and values through foraging and processing local foods. KTOO's Jamie Deep joined them on their outdoor adventure last week and has a story.
Students, teachers, and families walk through squishy, mossy muskeg near the Eagle River United Methodist Camp north of Juneau. Among the students is first grader Owen Royal. He's crouched over small, short bushes peppered throughout the area, putting green and yellow leaves into an empty yogurt container looped around his neck.
We're picking thick shakteen, also known as Hudson Bay tea.
Owen says picking tea has been his favorite part of the day so far. Seventh grader Cassius Allen is one of the older students picking tea with eighth grader Leighton Hebner.
Is that good? Is that good?
Yeah.
Leighton says he learned how to identify the tea from friends and teachers.
They said always make sure it's yellow at the bottom, like fully yellow or partially yellow, and it will still work.
Cassius says he thinks the tea will taste good once they process it.
Probably going to have to mix it up with some other flavors so it tastes not plain and normal.
Overall, Cassius seems to be having some fun with Leighton while picking tea.
I gotta help his nose a little.
This is part of a long-standing field trip for students at Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy, a Tlingit language immersion school. It's not just for the students. They're joined by families and volunteers, as well as students from Hayukatani Kuti, a Tlingit language preschool. That's a language immersion preschool where children primarily speak in Tlingit. Things have been changing slightly after the program expanded to middle school. While it's normally a day trip, it's turned into an overnight field trip for the older students. Nakichlan Hans Chester is a biliteracy specialist at the school. He says getting students out of the classroom opens the door for a lot of learning.
To me, in this context, it's real living, and they hear us using the language with each other and communicating, or just even expressions, to say when you're doing something, and it's in context and it makes sense.
In addition to tea, students also learned to fillet salmon and make jam. Chester says the jam was going to be given to guests at a ku'ik, or potlatch, the next day.
When we do our ku'ik, it's to honor our lost clan members. And so, you know, it's really important for us to teach these skills to our kids. So when they grow up and they lose their mom or their sister or their cousin or whoever that's in their family, they'll have these skill sets to rely on so that they can do what we do.
Chester says this field trip makes him feel like the school is in a stronger place than it was before.
This field trip has really helped me see that more, just with the level of engagement from kids, hearing them use the language more, some of them stepping up and becoming leaders out here is really awesome to see.
In the camp kitchen, Tlingit language teacher Nay Tamuluk portions out bowls of fish soup. The middle schoolers filleted coho salmon for it the night before. Tamuluk says she likes getting to know the students more, both new and old.
Just seeing them in their element, being able to witness a lot of their growths and everything like that. It's been a lot of fun. They're also incredibly hilarious, so it's been entertaining.
Once they're back at school, Chester says they will process the tea and give it away to community members. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
And Alaska's Office of Children's Services is defending their practices in a federal court case that began last month in Anchorage. A national organization brought the class action lawsuit, hoping it can force court-mandated reforms to a system they say is failing Alaskan kids. And as Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports, they say the strategy has worked in other states.
When former foster youth Matthew Vandenberg took the stand on the first day of the federal trial, he told the judge about a foster placement he and other foster youth called the Ramen House. He recounted his testimony in an interview.
The people there would give you 2 ramen packs a day. And if you ate them, say, in the morning because you were hungry, you would have to wait until the next day to eat again. I lost over 30 pounds being at that foster home.
He says he was shoved so hard that it broke a wall in the same home. He testified that he moved foster placements about 13 times over about 4 years. OCS is supposed to visit kids in their care monthly, partly to make sure kids aren't mistreated. But Marsha Lowry says those monthly visits in Alaska just aren't happening, putting kids like Vandenberg at risk. She's an attorney and director of a national nonprofit, A Better Childhood, that brings lawsuits against states to push for foster care reforms.
How else can you know whether a child is safe when you put a child in a foster home? How can you know when it's time to move a child to get freed for adoption? And the visits with both children and with parents are very, very low.
Lowry says that on many federal measures, Alaska's foster care system ranks among the worst in the country. Data shows that Alaska has fewer caseworkers visiting children, longer child protection response times, shorter average placements, and more children maltreated while in OCS custody. And Lowry says the state has not taken the necessary steps to correct problems in the system.
Alaska is one of the few places that I know of that hires workers who don't have college degrees. Nice, well-intentioned people can't just do this job. They need an education.
Lowry says lawsuits like this can be an effective way to force system reforms. She says her organization has sued 12 other states in the last decade to improve foster care systems. They've won 4 and 8 are ongoing. She says when they sued New Jersey in 1999, their system was one of the worst in the country. Now it's one of the best.
There was a court order entered and there was monitoring provided, and New Jersey over a period of time reformed its system and had to go into court periodically and report on whether or not it was doing that. And that helped with the legislature. The legislature then was required to appropriate more money.
Alaska's foster care system has long been plagued with serious problems. Caseloads for caseworkers are often several times the expert recommended maximum. The state consistently reports high turnover, which experts say creates worse outcomes for kids. In 2018, a law required reforms meant to reduce caseloads and staff turnover, with mandatory audits to check on the progress. The final audit released this year showed that by most measures, OCS hasn't made meaningful progress. But those involved in bringing this class action lawsuit to trial hope that if they win, it could actually force meaningful change. Alicia Groh is a national expert in child welfare systems and testified in the federal trial. She says a wide variety of things can force change in a child welfare system, but she agrees lawsuits can be effective.
In some states, it is a lawsuit or the beginnings of a lawsuit that prompts a state to say, we need to look at this differently. We need to take very significant action to address these concerns.
But she says strong leadership is also an important piece of the puzzle. The Office of Children's Services declined an interview for this story while the trial is taking place. But in her testimony, OCS Director Kim Gway consistently pointed out that her office is just one piece of Alaska's child welfare system. She acknowledges caseloads can be high, but says the state can't implement caseload caps because OCS can't turn away kids or families who need help. Margaret Patton Walsh is Assistant Attorney General defending the state in the trial. She says one of the main problems is that Alaska has a serious caseworker shortage.
Our perspective is child welfare work is really hard. It's especially hard in Alaska because of the size and the remoteness of so many of the communities. And we are doing the best that we can to manage the challenges that we have.
She says OCS has made some positive changes in an overstressed system.
OCS is trying to fix some things, but the world is changing around them. The economy is changing. The demographics of Alaska is changing. And so a solution that you might develop at one moment in time is not going to be a permanent fix.
The federal trial is slated to wrap up September 10th. There's no timeline for when the judge will issue her decision. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
And as for the weather, it's currently 57 degrees, and the rain has tapered off a little bit this afternoon. It looks like it might be pretty clear or dry tomorrow, with a high of 61 degrees. The rain is likely to return on Sunday. And there's a special weather statement from the National Weather Service that more heavy rainfall is due early next week. It looks like we'll see similar conditions to what we saw earlier this week. This is KTOO.